resistance and guide the everyday Muslim on the journey in Islam. Everyday Muslim, Saturdays 11 a.m. on Women Radio 91.7. Simplified understanding of the day.
If you listen to that song by Zane Baker, The Woman I Love, you'll establish the fact that women will take three principal features. She's either a mother, she's somebody's wife, she's somebody's daughter. And that song actually just melts my heart, reassures me, makes me proud of who I am, knowing that I am cared for in whatever form that I take as a woman. And on that note, I'd like to welcome you to Everyday Muslim live on WFM 91.7. With Everyday Muslim, we try to address the misconceptions on Islam, foster peaceful coexistence, and of course try to guide ourselves, you and I, on this journey through Islam until we return to our Lord. My name is Amina Adams and I'm the one in driver's seat today, and I do have a beautiful guest that's going to work with us on the status of women revealing the truth. And I hope that sets all sorts of fireworks in your head and trying to figure out what's going on here. I did go in the feminist path. Nah, that's not what it is. But anyways, it's not my job to talk about it. It is the job of Barrister Sharifa Enese. She's a lawyer and a hijab rights advocate. She currently works as an associate at Nimble Solicitors in Magadha, and she's the executive secretary of Hijab Rights Advocacy Initiative. She has a first-hand experience of hijab discrimination, and as such, has become passionate about promoting the understanding of the hijab and niqab among Nigerians, irrespective of their religion. She has joined in handling over 100 hijab rights cases in schools, workplaces, and of course, the general public. I do hope that you've called on your friends and family members to tune in right now. WFM 91.7, it's going to be a roller coaster ride here in the studio. So, Barrister, throughout history, the status of women has evolved through various pivotal moments. And this has significantly altered their roles and rights in society. For instance, the women's suffrage movement in the early 20th century was a crucial turning point. Similarly, the feminist movements of the 1960s and the 1970s challenged traditional gender roles and fought for equal rights, leading to important legislative changes and greater societal awareness about gender equality. With this in context, how did women's suffrage movement of the early 20th century and this feminist movement that we refer to collectively reshape societal norms and legislative frameworks leading to the current status of women's rights and roles in the society? Barrister Sharifa.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I am very excited to be here. To answer your question, the women's suffrage movement in the early 20th century and the feminist movement of the 1960s and the 1970s collectively reshaped societal norms about women and their roles in the society and even legislative frameworks about women's rights. So we have things like political participation, for instance. Before these two movements, women were not allowed to vote. And during the women's suffrage movement of the early 20th century, it brought about the right of women to vote. They were able to achieve that and also led to political participation. Women wanted to participate beyond voting. Mm. And we also have, there were legal reforms that prohibited certain discrimination specifically against women, and they advocated for legal reforms that prohibited gender discrimination and included changes to laws related to property, inheritance, and even divorce, what women get in the event of divorce and all of that. We also have the social and cultural attitudes. These movements challenge traditional gender roles and stereotypes, advocating for greater recognition of women's capabilities beyond domestic roles. Mm. We have reproductive rights. For instance, we are talking about contraceptives, for instance, the use of contraceptives and the right to abortion.
Okay.
So those are the reproductive rights they fought for in that time, in the 20th century. I think the women's suffrage movement was in the 20th century. Both of them were in the 20th century, and they fought for these rights. Women were able to choose to keep a baby or decide to prevent pregnancy, which was not something that was allowed because a woman was relegated to simply domestic
baby making factory
baby
and
making and raising them. Exactly. Even their schools, even the schools they were asked to go to, even the schools women were sent to after a certain
home
level
economics
of
it, class.
Exactly. They are just teaching them to be wives and to be mothers.
No.
Which to me, I would not say that is exactly a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it was bad in the sense of it tunneled their vision. Mm. It was myopic. It didn't give them the opportunity to think outside the box, to do other things. They could do that, but they didn't have to do just that.
Mm.
So it opened the suffrage movement and the feminist movement opened the way for them to do more than that. Although I'm sure they eventually took it too far as expected. But Islam has been in the forefront of this right from time before this time.
Yeah.
At least women, Muslim women, when they didn't have to join fights like this. The rights of Muslim women, as it is today, is how it was thousands of years ago. So we didn't have to fight this fight. Islam believes in equity, not equality.
I like the fact that you set that record straight, because incidentally, let me apologize in advance to our audience, because I know we have a blend of Muslims and non-Muslim audience, and so we will go with the flow of equality because that's the trend in the world. However, Islamically, we preach equity as opposed to equality. So you'll hear us speaking equity sometimes, and equality, we are clear in our heads. Equity is the one that shows, you know, you don't have to be exact. It doesn't have to be a 50-50 thing. You know, that's what equity is. Equality is where you're splitting it right down the middle. You know, I get A, you must get A, I get B, and all of that. So let's be clear about when we use equality or equity. We are not confused. We're clear about it. Islam preaches equity more than anything else. So, but I like the fact that you mentioned that Islam had, our rights had been perfected, so to speak, for Muslim women as far back as thousands of years ago. If you could shed a bit more example on that, preferably with, instances to buttress this. You talked about women. So you're saying that 1400 years ago, women owned property. You know, women had the right to do things they wanted to do beyond just making babies and cleaning the houses?
Yes. From the beginning of Islam, from the inception of Islam, the rules of inheritance, as we know it today, have always been the rules of inheritance, the rules of owning property. The daughter is not prohibited from owning property. Before the coming of Islam, people were ashamed of even having daughters.
Daughters were buried alive.
Exactly, but daughters were buried alive. So we wouldn't even go as far as saying rights of women.
What rights?
People that don't even have the right to life. No. What other rights could they
can
have?
You possibly
so
ask
the
for?
The coming of Islam made it compulsory for women to inherit their relatives, their dead relatives, for instance, and also the men in their lives were responsible, completely responsible for the upkeep of women, despite the fact that Islam still permitted women to work, to seek knowledge, to go to school, to go as far as possible with bearing the rules of Islam in mind, to seek knowledge. Yet the men in their lives were responsible for their upkeep. They could own property, they could inherit their father, but they were not obligated to use their inheritance to care for other relatives or their children, if their children have a father. So the rules of inheritance, the rules of owning property, have been the same. It is still the same to now. If a male relative dies, the daughter or the female relative, the next male relative begins to take care of the female who is alive, irrespective of age difference. The men have always been the kawama, the protectors and the maintainers of women. It is not meant to relegate women. I know that a number of people feel a bit inferior, that why do men have to be the protectors and maintainers of women? I really want to be protected. I don't know about you, and still have the right to work, to earn money, to get knowledge as far as possible.
Right.
Till this day, anything you want to do, you are allowed to do it, bearing the rules of Islam in mind.
So how has the portrayal of women in media evolved over time? And what would you say the effect this has had on societal perceptions of gender roles? You know, so when I talk about gender roles, I'd like to put it... Incidentally, I read a document, an article about how things are changing in the world. When you say gender now, you know, there's so much confusion in the world. There's the youths. We know gender to mean male, female, but now I understand that we should go back to the olden days of saying sex. Sex means male or female. Gender, on the other hand, starts to mean 1001 things. But for the purpose of this broadcast, this program, gender still remains male, female. Sex, male, female. That's what we're talking about here. So, gender roles. How do you think, or in your opinion, how has the portrayal of women in media evolved over time, and what effect has this had on societal perceptions of gender roles?
Well, in the early to mid 20th century, women in the media were often depicted in stereotypical roles, such as homemakers, caretakers, or romantic interest, and these portrayals reinforced traditional gender roles, where women were expected to prioritize family and domestic duties only. But over time, we know the media has improved, or will I call it an improvement, or it has changed. It is no more like that. Taking little steps, decided to introduce women, especially through their movies and through ads on TV. You see that women are now playing masculine roles, or what were regarded as masculine, what were formerly regarded as masculine roles. You have a woman traveling to space in a movie, for instance. That will begin to change, reshape the mind of the viewers. And this improvement started after the feminist movement of the 1960s and the 1970s. Mm. So the media evolved. But I would say now that the media evolved positively at a time, but it seemed to now be evolving negatively. It's going backwards, because the feminist movement of the 1960s and the women's suffrage movement fought to desexualize women. Women should no longer be seen as romantic interest, romantic objects only, or domestic people only. But now, I at the beginning, the media actually got that by depicting women as things other than that. But we can say now that the media have gone away from that, and they are now re-sexualizing women. All kinds of ads about women, all kinds of ads that don't involve women. You see women there, and they are not even dressed for the ad. So clearly they are trying to appeal to the sexualization of the viewers. They want to bring a romantic feeling to the viewers. So I would say that your question said,
yes, so it's about these gender roles, you know, so this effect, this made what yes, the media yes. has done, and
yes,
effects
thank you.
On
the gender roles now. it is going wild now. Like I said, it started out well, and gender roles began to shift a little, open people's mind. Women were not only caretakers, they can do more than that. But now we know what is happening now. The feminist movement is not the feminist movement of before.
It's been hijacked,
and gender roles are being interchanged, they are being switched. Men taking women's place, women taking men's place. That's how the roles are now. You see, women don't want to be caretakers anymore. Earlier, we were fine being caretakers. We're just saying
we can do more.
But now, we are not fine being caretakers anymore. We don't want to be child bearers. We don't want to be caretakers. Some people even get married and say, I don't want to have kids. Why do I have to have kids? I have my career ahead of me. So the media have both done harm and good. It started with good, but I would say it is doing harm now to the perception of gender roles.
So you touched on women now doing men things and men doing women things, and can we put all that on the media solely? In fact, when you spoke about it being positive, I started to scan through the 80s and the ads on the TV and all of that, and what I was seeing and things that were coming to my vision are not particularly palatable, because from the 80s I already saw a lot of sexualization, you know, of the women. So it was, you're trying to sell engine oil, but the woman has to be scantily dressed to sell engine oil to power a car. So I didn't, you know, there was just no reconciliation. But yeah, so over the years, and incidentally now, like I mentioned earlier, gender now, definition of gender is now so corrupt, confused. You honestly, now you hear the word gender, and I think, is it the cross one? Is it the one that has relocated from being male to female, or female to male? Because that's all still gender, and all the names in between and all of that. So we won't even get so much into it. But I just want to see from the Islamic perspective, realistically speaking, where do we sit with Islam in terms of gender roles? What is the go-to? Because at the end of the day, it's everyday Muslim, and we are trying to be better Muslims by, you know, reminding ourselves of what Islam dictates. So what would you say gender roles are or should be from the Islamic parlance?
The Islamic perspective, like I said before, and I would keep saying, it is what it has been for a long time. So it did it. It doesn't need any improvement. It didn't, and it has never needed any improvement. So the Islamic perspective on gender roles, we believe in equity, not equality. It is not about who is meant to do this and who can do this better. It is about what the Quran and the Sunnah has specifically assigned to each gender. And we believe there is wisdom in this, because if we look at it practically, the woman is definitely the caregiver. The woman is by nature a caregiver. She's the one that is equipped to give care. She's the one that bears children. She's the one that can raise the children even better than the men. And the man is meant to be the provider. He is the one more equipped with the strength to do some certain tasks.
Through the physical features, the way Allah has built the structure.
Yes, through physical features. I know nowadays there are a lot of tasks that don't involve, that don't require any physical exertion, but you understand where I'm coming from. So the roles have been separated right from time, and there is wisdom in it. It does not intend to relegate anyone. In fact, the women are put on a pedestal in Islam. The paradise of the child, the Jannah of the child, lies under the feet of their mother. Is it just any mother? Is it just about a mother who doesn't even care to look after the child? We know statements like paradise lies under the feet of the mother may sound like a blanket, like a ticket to Jannah, just like that. But there will be conditions.
There's a lot of work. You have to put in the work.
Exactly. You have to put, the mother will have to actually be there as a mother. She will have to accept and love her role and do it as a mother. So women are respected, and men are also given their place, their rightful place. There is no argument in that. Equity, not equality.
Right. What would you say are some key economic barriers that women face in achieving financial independence? And how can policies and initiatives support women's economic empowerment? And I say this from a place of, so I'll just share insight into an NGO that I've been affiliated with for, 12 years now. Okay. A lot of cases that come to light are mostly women that have been bashed, women that have been divorced or separated, single mothers, and a common denominator had been that they were not allowed to work. They were full-time housewives, and so when the inevitable happened, either they were kicked out with their children, they were thrown in the streets because there was absolutely zero independence. They had no financial means, no sustenance, no source of income whatsoever, and so they were left, you know, to be consumed by this travel. So what would you say, from your perspective, from your experience and exposure, the basic economic barriers that women face in achieving financial independence, and you know, no. Is there any initiatives to support women's economic empowerment?
No. What you mentioned, the scenario you mentioned, is one of those barriers. It is limiting women, raising them to just be one thing. We are allowed, especially as Muslim women, to be more than one thing. So there is no need to limit them, even husbands limiting their wives, not letting them have a means of income. No one guarantees us tomorrow. No one guarantees that the husband will live forever. So of course, limiting women, refusing to give them a comprehensive education that can equip them for the future, should they need to be equipped for the future. A woman's husband dies and she needs to go out and get a job. She doesn't have the means to get a job. She doesn't have a certificate, she doesn't have a skill, she doesn't have a training. How is she going to make her way out there? So of course, that is one of the limitations, that is one of the challenges, limiting women, limiting the education of women, limiting their thinking, the way they are being raised. Another factor is the equal pay gap. The pay gap, when the work pay gap, women, it's still happening today. It's still happening. We would think that the world has evolved such that it wouldn't be happening. Of course, basic salary, a company would need to justify giving a man more basic salary than a woman. But you see that in many companies today, somehow men get things like more bonuses. I know of someone who once told me that she heard that a colleague got a particular amount as bonus, and she approached her boss that, what about me? For equal work, they are both on the same level. And she asked the boss that, what about me? I haven't received anything. And the boss was like, what do you want to use it to do? Do you have any family that you are taking care of? So the man is believed that he has responsibilities, so he should be giving more. I can't understand where that is coming from.
Right.
But if they are both going to work, they might as well earn the same thing. They might as well be paid the same thing. Same thing with housing allowances. Most companies provide housing for the men, but they believe the woman's house is her husband's house.
Right.
What if she's not married? What if her husband would come to live with her in that house, in the company giving house? But they would not think that way. So the work pay gap is still an issue, although a lesser issue, but it's still an issue. It's not as rampant as it was before. And we also have women are not financially educated. They are not ordinarily financially educated. With the advent of the internet now, of course, anyone can get any kind of education they want to with the right access. But in the past, and in fact, not even
hopefully
in the
her husband past, allows her to own a smartphone. Hopefully,
exactly. Because I was going there.
I mean, I have life cases. We have
I
cases.
I was going there. That many women don't even once they are in the husband's house.
Palasa, you are relegated to a Palasa phone straight up. You're not allowed to hold a smartphone. I have
exactly.
Life cases that were
unfortunately
still
women who are married who have the luck of being married to. I don't want to say narcissists, but I know that there are some men that are very, very insecure about equipping their women financially, even with her own money. Mm. I know of people who have to give their salary to their husband,
yes,
who do not know how to manage money. They don't know how to spend the money for the home. The husband gives them everything, rations, everything. So in the event that the husband throws them out, they are divorced or the husband dies or they are separated, one way or the other, the woman needs to always have that option to fend for herself if the need arises.
Right.
So part of the policies that can be put in place, I believe some of them are already in place, like making it compulsory for women, making it prohibiting that people, companies can pay
more
their workers without justifying it. They would have to justify it based on something other than gender, race, religion, things like that.
Right.
So there are also provisions against discrimination in our constitution that would also protect women. So they should be able to get equal pay, and they should not be discriminated when they won't try to get a job. Many people don't employ married women, for instance. In fact, many people specifically don't want to employ women, but it's worse for married women. Again, I understand where that may be coming from, but it is still, understanding it doesn't mean that it is right, because they would say that when you employ a married woman, you are not her first boss.
Mm.
She has a boss at home who can stop her from going to work.
Absolutely.
Anytime. Again, I blame the male gender for this. I have to blame them. I have to blame them, because if the man at home is not so insecure in his masculinity, he would not have had to control the woman so much so as to make her unsuitable for certain jobs.
Deep, you're just digging into different kinds.
I came here today, I said I was going to be careful because I'm passionate about some topics.
Yes,
I don't want to use some certain.
I know that already. Words. I'm dreading opening the phone lines, and I can't imagine the first callers that will come and say, "Hey, if I've come, feminism,
I have a certification in Islamic psychology." So when I think of things, I think too much into the minds of the people doing it.
Right. Okay, so I want to take you up on something, and I want to, it's just like a plain devil's advocate kind of statement. You said earlier, you know, when we talked about gender roles, the men being kawam, right, the protectors and the maintainers. Could that be the reason why they reckon women should stay put? I am your maintainer. Let me do my job. You stay where you should be. Could that be the reason?
Well,
such that even when, you know, so if I die, because if the woman then argues, but if I die, your brother is there, your father is there, they'll take over. You don't have to, you know. Could that be the reason why we are struggling to get out of this?
Well, I would not be being fair if I don't admit that some women do need to be tamed.
Okay.
The man has the duty not to become perhaps a dayute, a person who watches the wife go wayward or do wayward things without calling her. So sometimes, if it requires that this woman is not someone that can be trusted outside, she may not even be able to trust herself outside. So if it requires that she should be asked to stay home, then from the Islamic perspective, the man has that full right and discretion to do that. But he has to do it with fairness, because Allah is the judge where the husband and the wife is concerned. So I believe that, yes, it is reasonable and it is his full right to ask her not to go out to get a means of earning to look for work.
But exactly. someone is listening to you, and we haven't been up on the phone lines, but our regular customers are here.
Okay.
So the question for you is a lengthy one, so just pay attention. Assalamu alaikum wa barakatuh. Good morning in the studio. I'm glad for the opportunity of listening to this interesting topic this morning. My question is this: I understand the facts of the rights and position accorded women in Islam. However, I would like the guests to comment on the reality of some Muslim women in our communities that are still prevented from working and achieving financial independence. This is quite common. The guest spoke earlier about the rights of women to work and own properties given to them more than 1400 years ago. However, many women in our community are still prevented by their husbands from working, insisting that their role and duty are in the home. And some scholars back this up with their own fatwa, using sacred texts to back up their opposition to women working. Women that are graduates and with high potentials to be economically productive, making some of these women to be completely financially dependent. And when the husband is not able to provide anymore, either sufficiently or completely due to death, the woman become totally helpless and vulnerable. Can you please comment on the stark difference between the ideal you have spoken about and the ugly reality of some women in our community? Thank you.
Let me just say Jazakumullah Khairan for this question. I love this question. It will definitely set some misconceptions aright. As a woman, I believe, especially a woman with some level of education, if you are lucky enough to have high level of education, you should be able to equip yourself mentally to be a free thinking individual, such that if you have the decree to end up with a man who wishes to tame you for a good cause or not for a good cause, it may be for a good reason or it may not be for a good reason, you would be able to find your way. You would not be so utterly limited by the fact that you are asked not to go out to work. The statement that the women, their roles are in the home, it's not wrong. It's not wrong that our roles are in the home. We are building the future generation. So I don't think it is wrong to say that women's role is in the home. And of course, there are textual backings to this. But there is no prohibition, there is no express prohibition in the Quran or in the Sunnah that a woman should not work. Even little things as going to the masjid for salah, the Prophet specifically said, don't prevent them from going. The important thing is that when you leave your homes, you are properly dressed. So this matter should not be an us versus them matter. It's not the women versus the men. We are analyzing what Islam says about something. And as a woman, if Islam says something about something, then you say that you look for a legal, a halal way out of your situation, or you have to fully accept what the Quran and the Sunnah says. Of course, there should be avenues for you to perhaps air your grievances and get something that is suitable for you. With the advent of the internet, if you have the opportunity to have a browsing phone and a laptop, you can work from home. I am a good example of that. I got married quite, I won't say early, but I wasn't done with school yet. I wasn't quite done with schooling yet. So I still had to attend law school, and I had a baby. And in law school, I got pregnant yet again. Now imagine if immediately after law school, I carried my pali and I said, I must get job by fire, by force.
Mm.
And then I abandoned my two babies at home. Their dad, of course, is going to work full time. So whether the dad asked me to stop working or not, as a mother, whose duty, primary duty, your primary duty, of course, you should make money, you should be financially independent, but number one duty, you are making human beings, you are raising human beings. That should be more important. I understand that there are peculiar situations. I don't want to take too much of your time. No, talk about this. I could talk about this.
I like the perspective that you just thrown in. You are using yourself as a live example, and it makes a lot of sense because it will resonate with some people. It will help some other people get. So, how did you navigate this hurdle? And before you carry on, just hold your thought. We need to go on a break so you can catch your breath or come back from this break. There's more to come. We're going to shred that question as best as possible. I'm glad you've gone on the tangent of bringing in your personal experience. So stay with us. We'll be right back. Day, we're one big family. You're my brother, you're my sister, I'm just a brother from another mother, and that's how come I ended up as your wife, right? So let's make this work. At the end of the day, it's for our own good, and when your woman is empowered, subhanAllah, your family is empowered, the community is empowered, the world at large is empowered. Back to Sister Barrister Sharifa. So you were sharing your own personal experience. This is you, law school in your face, two kids on the block. How did you navigate it?
Well, it was really, really challenging. And when I finished law school, I did want to work. And I went for NYSC. My NYSC was more like I wasn't there, because I went to camp pregnant, NYSC camp pregnant, and I came back for my posting letter with a baby.
Right.
So you can imagine the plight of the people that wanted to post me when they see a newborn baby with me. They are like, "Are you a lawyer?" I'm like, "Yes." Where are you now going to work? Because they know, with this baby, how do I navigate working in a law firm? They did post me to one law firm in my area. Then I went there, and the man said something about they are relocating, they don't want a copper. And I felt like, I think it's because I've got this
baby. Is it the baby that will be doing the research and appearing in court?
You want to know something? Right. I wasn't sad about all of this. Of course, we were not buoyant then. It's not like I was rich or swimming in money, or like I had everything I wanted. I was not financially independent then, but I have never been without some sort of income,
right?
And that is what I am charging you women out there listening to me today. No matter what your situation is, don't be without something, without an income.
An urgent 2K means of income.
Use your skill, use your brain, use your hands, use something. From school, whenever I come home, I schooled in University of Ilorin. Whenever I come home from school, I go to, there's a market arena at Oshodi. I park, I buy some footwears. I take it back to school. My dad was sponsoring me. He was paying my fees. He was sending me my allowances. But I wasn't satisfied with that. I didn't feel just fine with just receiving money. That if his money doesn't come, there's nothing I can do. So I started from there. And throughout my NYSC days, yes, I was receiving my allowance, but immediately I was done with that. I applied vigorously for jobs. Even though I knew that I could not be 100% available for these jobs, but I went for the interviews. And my biggest challenge with getting a job then wasn't even the fact that I was a mother and a wife. It was my hijab.
Right.
When they saw my hijab, there was always the question of, is this how you'll be coming to the office?
Right.
Is this how you go to court? I said, I'll go to court the way I went to law school.
Mm-hmm.
Is this how you'll be coming to the office? Ah, please, this is how I'll be coming. Some people even tell me, I'll call you. Ah, you have a very good result because I finished 2-1, 2-1 from both law school and university. Despite all of the challenges, sincerely, my law school 2-1 felt like a first class to me. Because I knew what I was going through during that period. But I still couldn't get a job. But eventually, I started to seek remotes instead of going out. Because really, if I would be frank with myself, if I got those jobs, would I be able to put in the work? I had two little kids at home. Do you know how I started working? I went to my child's school. I asked them, are you in need of a teacher?
Wow.
Are you in need of a teacher? And the woman was like, but you are a lawyer. I said, don't worry, I can teach. She said, but we can't pay you well. Mm. I said, don't worry.
Mm.
I think they started paying me 25,000 naira. Mm. I was just happy that something came in at the end of the month. I didn't spend transportation to go to that place. So it was a full profit. I didn't spend transportation. I was back before my husband would be back.
Mm.
I was in the school with the kids. So it was more like I was present as a caretaker and still earning something. Another thing is humility. There's nothing you can't do. As long as it is within the boundaries of Islam, as long as it doesn't strip you of your self-respect and your dignity, there is nothing you can do. You can't say, I'm a doctor, how can I go to a school and say, why are they paying me this little money?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, know your worth, but also, if you want an income, you have to go to somewhere. I'm working now, but I am still trying to juggle remote jobs, about
right.
two remote jobs.
Yeah.
I can't drop them because I don't know if I get pregnant today, if I'll be able to go to my physical job.
Right.
The remote job is what will...
I need to cut in and take
okay.
this message. Good morning, Maz. Excuse me. Thank you for this topic. Please, I will appreciate the guest speaker to speak from the two sides. That is the reality and what was recommended. Some women rarely understand that their primary assignment is the home. But our partners are not that support required. Financially, emotionally, they are not there. Please touch on joint ownership of properties. Thank you. Good job. Right. These customers are not dropping their names, but anyways. And just before you respond, I'm just going to open the phone lines briefly. So if you do want to call in, allow my sis respond and then you just can call. 07000-917-917 is the number to call. 07000-917-917 is the number to call to be a part of the show. You can also send your SMS or WhatsApp messages to 07031-756-537. Right, sis.
Yes.
I was going there.
I would not be able to cover this topic without talking about the other side. The men have I don't want to make it an us versus them thing, but it is really becoming an us versus them thing. The men are not, most of the men, they just, what they hear is how much rights they have over the women, and that is it. And they begin to exert that right.
Let's take this call very quickly. We'll come back. Hello, good morning. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Now, Brother Yusuf, please keep your comments or questions short. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Mr. Yusuf Olamileko Adedeyo.
Right.
Considering the topic this morning, you are discussing about status of women.
Yes, please.
So, yes. So, in order not to divert the the main topic.
Yes, sir.
I think the guest there has also acknowledged that individuals in relationships have, they have their own strength and ability. If you now look at the Quran, Quran Surah An-Nisa', that's Quran 4, verse 34.
Yes.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, the Quran says, men are the protectors and maintainers of women.
Yes.
As Allah has made some of them excel others, and because they spend out of their wealth, that is to support them.
Yes.
So, when we are to see the meaning of this verse, it clearly indicates that God has given that responsibility of provision of things, you know, that the family, not the woman only, the family, including the children, needs. So, the Quran also encourages mutual support and cooperation in the family.
Right.
Not that, but in this maybe Western. Incursion of
Brother Yusuf, let me put you on the spot. Hello, can I put you on the spot, Brother Yusuf?
Okay.
Right, does your wife work?
No, I'm not married.
Oh, I see, okay. Will your wife work? Will you let your wife work?
Of course, because if he's not.
You're not the one we're looking for. You're not the man we're looking for. Anyway, Jazakumullah khair. Let's give others to join us. Thank you so much for calling in, Sister Sharifa. I'm glad he allowed me to put him on the spot. Jazakumullah khair, Brother Yusuf. I know we don't do that normally, but thank you so much for allowing us. And it's fair. I mean, you can see he was very clear. Starting to see within the confines of Islam and all the, you know, all the things unsaid, all the surroundings, all the reality check, I will let my wife work if she wants to. And that's safe. That's so he's confirming that, you know, support financially, emotionally, he's going to be there for her. Jazakumullah khair. So,
I want to quickly say that it is the duty of the man to pick a wife that he can fully trust. I believe preventing your wife to work is from a place of distrust or insecurity.
Being unable to communicate. Because at the end of the day, if you found that, okay, I noticed that this woman is not coordinated, she's a bit disorganized, she cannot multitask, she's not able to. So if I allow her work, the home will be neglected. If that's what it is, a communication
yes,
will resolve it better.
I know in the home there is a head and there is the
neck.
A superior, exactly.
Yes, there's a head and the neck.
There is need for communicating. It's not just about just commanding her. You have to sit down, you are not going to work. And then she feels victimized.
Right.
She feels like, why is this happening to me? Perhaps a discussion,
right,
asking her, okay, if you do this and you do that, what are we going to do about this and that?
Right.
So if she says, okay, I will do this, okay, instead of working 5 days a week, I can do 2 days a week, if my employer can let me do that.
Remote work, and there's even a lot of remote work.
I can work remotely the rest of the days. Let her understand, she is also an individual, she has a brain, she has sense, she can think. If she is made to know what is at stake, if you have done your due diligence when you were picking a wife, and you picked someone that you can trust fully with the deen, with your children, you are sure that what is guiding her is not ego, it's not society, it's not friends. You know that she's someone who would listen, who would be reasonable. Of course, our major, our primary role still remains the home, but due to the fact that the world is not the way it was in the advent of Islam, and we don't have Islamic communities, we don't have Islamic states, such that when the husband dies or if the husband is no longer in the picture, the community will care for the wife. That is how it was then. The community will care for the wife. You see people bringing food for the children every day, men and women visiting them and checking on their welfare. But now
a man and a woman are still struggling to keep their home. Where is the extra to take care of another?
You have to equip your wife. You took her from her father's house and you took her under your wing. You have to equip her for anything, for the unforeseen. Of course, death is something we know will come one day, and anyone can go first. And it may not even be that. It may be you may travel abroad and you struggle for a while.
It can even be incapacitation.
Can
I'm
be
talking
incapacitation.
An accident can happen and render you.
I will be lying in valley. We pray against all of these things,
but
nothing wrong
reality
with
checks.
Preparing.
We have
for
another
it.
Call. Let's take this call. Another regular customer, Brother Mahmoud. Salaam alaikum. Please keep your question or comment. Please keep it brief.
No problem. Thank you so much. I've called several times to thank MPAC for giving me the opportunity to come on board. And I've started calling as immediate as the next episode. But unfortunately, all to no avail.
So,
thank
now.
You for this program. And also for, you know, giving me this opportunity to call in. And please, I quickly want to say, I want to talk about some issues here.
Right.
Especially the one that talks about as soon as a woman enters into a marriage, then the man, you know, subdues her.
But Mahmoud, in fairness, I put Raisu on the spot. I'm going to put you on the spot. Is your wife working? Do you let your wife work?
Yeah, it depends with conditions.
No. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
Does your wife work? Is it yes or a no? No, depends.
Yes, she works.
Alhamdulillah, khalas. You're not the one looking for. Carry on with your comments.
No worries, you skipped my thoughts. I'm with you, sir. I'm listening.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Jazakumullah khairan. Alhamdulillah. So the men that are calling in, subhanAllah, they actually understand the intricacies. They understand Islam fully, and they allow their women be women. They allow them to be independent. They allow them to be empowered. And I think that's the message from this broadcast today. If you don't take anything from it, just understand that there are nuances. There are laid down rules and regulations. There are requirements by the deen. And so long as you're sticking with it, inshallah, there is absolutely nothing wrong with encouraging your woman to be empowered. Please carry on. Let me not.
So I would like to also say to the men, and that if you have a wife that, for instance, you would like her to wear the proper hijab when going out,
right.
You would like her to not walk so closely among men,
right.
You would like that she follows the rules of Islam, even
right.
if she is to walk. You can find another way to empower her.
Right.
You don't just tell a woman, sit at home, don't do anything. If you think that outside is bad for her, going outside is bad for her, or being in the labor market is bad for her, why not find another way to empower her?
There are numerous alternatives.
You are charged to do even better than her father would have done for her.
Exactly.
And her father would not just put her at home with no income and total dependence.
With a master's degree and a PhD in her kitchen.
Total dependence is even a headache for you.
Mm.
Do you really want a wife that asks you for everything?
Money
of
for
course,
matches.
Of course, you are responsible.
Daddy,
for
my
sanctuary
is running out. Please
buy
for
buy
me.
You buy it all. You
let me come to this question that a caller asked earlier. We answered the part one. We didn't answer the part two. Joint ownership of properties. And I'm glad you're a lawyer. So just take it from both legal perspective and reality check. We're almost out of time. Please say yeah.
Okay. Joint ownership of property. In a marriage, yes, doable. Husband and wife can purchase property, and they would have to use perhaps the family name, and in the event of divorce they would have to share it. This is if their marriage is under the act. But if they get married under Islamic law takes the lead, and sharing of property after a separation or a divorce under the Sharia, to the best of my knowledge, is that whatever the man gets for the wife during the pendency of the marriage is hers to take out of the marriage.
Right.
So you get your wife a car, you cannot say, I divorce you, give me the car keys. It's hers, she's taking it out.
Even if you register in his name.
Well, if it is registered in his name, again, that will now be our common law, our regular law in Nigeria. And of course, if it is registered in his name, he may be able to take it back. But if he's a man that wishes to follow strictly the Sharia, if it is registered in his name, he should know that taking it back is prohibited for him.
Mm.
He has given it in the marriage. He can't put his eyes there again.
Mm.
She's taking it out of the marriage. So whatever he gets for her is hers
right.
in the marriage. And I don't think there is anything much about owning property jointly. It is more about an inheritance and maybe, for instance, if the man is still alive, maybe there will be a way to share the property by an agreement. I began to venture into premarital agreements,
what
we call prenuptial agreements, but it is not just about property. But of course, property is there. So if you want to go into marriage, Doreen, if you visit an Islamic premarital counselor, someone who can also help you out with a prenuptial agreement, if it is something that is not a sore topic between you and your
prospective spouse.
Yes, exactly. So you can prepare an agreement that provides for, in the event that this happens, this is how we are going to share the property. I'm your wife. Even if I didn't work with you, I was home with you.
I encouraged you.
I took care of your your home and your kids while you were able to achieve this thing. So you can't leave me hanging dry just because you worked for it or they are in your name. So in case this, if you ever want me out of your house, if you want to divorce me, these are the basic things you prepare, you will provide. Of course, under the Marriage Act, the man is expected to provide accommodation for his children.
Right.
He's not expected to provide for the wife.
Yes.
He's to provide accommodation for the children.
If he says that I'm providing the accommodation with me, the children stay with me because...
No. The court usually takes into consideration, the best interest of the child is what is taken into consideration.
True.
A minor child, for instance, is always, at every instance, best with the mother.
True.
Unless it can be proven that the mother is irresponsible or that she cannot care for the child, she's insane or something very strong. But the child is always it. I tell men, there's no need going to fight it.
Mm.
Unless you can prove that this woman is really, really, really bad for these children. She has abandoned them at some point or the other, ordinarily. Because the best interest of the child, the woman is the caregiver. If you give the children to the man, what happens?
He wouldn't be available. He would leave them with a maid or bring another woman or something.
Or drop them with his family member. They would not get that motherly care and love that they would have ordinarily gotten. So if he's obligated to provide an accommodation for the children, by extension, that includes the mother.
True.
Because she is the caregiver. So he provides accommodation, he provides feeding allowances, he clothes them, and he pays their school fees
and all of that.
We know that this is not a hard and fast rule.
Mm.
Couples who don't divorce on a sour note, or who are not who don't have resentment towards each other, may be able to work out something. You know that, okay, this man, I once loved him, maybe he's not very buoyant, let me not task him too much. I can do this. I'm staying in my father's house. That is already free of charge.
Alhamdulillah. we can go on and on, but we are out of time. And Jazakumullah khairan. If you joined today, we can carry on the conversation on our social media handles. You can go to WFM and drop a comment about Everyday Muslim. You can also come to the MPAC website, www.mpac-ng.org, and drop your comments. Go to Everyday Muslim, catch up on all our previous episodes, and inshallah, we'll see you same time next week with another beautiful package of Everyday Muslim. Until then, stay blessed, be good to your woman. At the end of the day, we're one big family, that your wife is somebody else's daughter or sister or mother. We'll see you next week, inshallah.
Follow us.